Welcome to another episode of Pault on Power, Power System Design's podcast on the latest in power and power design. I'm your host, Alex Pault, and we have a special guest today, Benjamin Heckendorn, also known as Ben Heck. He's the current star in the Maker and Modder movement, and is also one of the celebrities at the Element 14 design site and community. So hi, welcome to the show, Ben.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is ours. The whole aspect of design, America was originally a country of tinkerers, and I'm loving the fact that we're going back to that. What do you think?
A country of tinkerers. I guess you could say that. Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of inventions have come from America over the years, like the airplane. Well, I think what's happening is the concept of making things has been kind of demystified. You know, in the past, it's like, oh, how is a spoon made? I mean, I don't know. I guess I'll buy one. But now that a lot of these devices and machines are kind of being made mass market and for the hobbyist market, people are realizing that it's not magic. And that's why people are getting more into making their own stuff. And, you know, the technology is making that happen along with the economies of scale with a lot of these machines getting more affordable.
It is
an upswing, definitely. I've been hacking long enough to notice that.
Well, and that's a very good point. You bring up two things. Number one, it is amazing to see how the tools have become so much more powerful and new philosophies. I mean, 3D printing is not a difficult technology. It was more of a paradigm shift of, oh, we could do that, and now it's just exploding in all kinds of directions.
Yeah, I mean, as I always tell people, like 3D printing, it's machines. There's nothing to them. You know, all the magic's in the software.
Exactly.
So, and now that we have like those, all these open source engines and whatnot, and that's what's really made it available for people. You just like plug the parts together and make a machine. So like myself, I could not write a slicing engine, but I could download one. You know, plug it into the software, and there, bam, there you go. And those kind of things are what makes it possible. I'm kind of like, you know, the community is really what makes it possible.
Exactly. People exchanging ideas. But then again, you said hacking, for example. Now people think of it as modding, and in the case of obviously in some completely new designs used from, even if it's made from cannibalizing old parts, the maker revolution, but you said originally hacking. Why don't you go back into that a little bit? You came obviously from that side of the house.
Yeah, when I first got into hacking, it was video game consoles, and I was like, oh, it'd be cool to take these old consoles and make them into portables. That was kind of where I got my start, and it started kind of as just a fun hobby, and then I put my work on the internet, and there's like an amazing amount of interest in it. So I kept on doing that, and eventually I just started modding things for a living. So that's kind of where it came from me. But, you know, like the first time I started working with game console stuff, it was like 2000 or so, and there wasn't as much information out there on the internet. You know, it's like, oh, how do I do this and this? How do I do this with my consumer product and make it do something else? There wasn't much. I mean, that was before YouTube. I don't know if Instructables was around. I don't think it was. So there's a lot less information out back then. So it's really changed since then. You know, was GitHub around back then? I can't remember. I don't think Google was barely a thing.
Exactly.
Think about, but so much has changed. I mean, you know, I talk, actually, one of my friends was just here today, and we were working on a project for his company, and he's like, oh, my son's addicted to Arduino now. Thanks a lot, Ben. And I'm like, man, if I was 11, it would have been so cool to, you know, have that kind of technology available, but of course it wasn't.
Exactly. I mean, I think when I was 11, the big technology was G.I. Joe had Kung Fu Grip or something along those lines.
I thought Speak and Spell was pretty impressive when I was a kid, you know, because, ooh, it can talk.
Yeah, well, and you know the story behind that, Ben, right? The Speak and Spell device itself.
What is the story behind it?
TI created the DSP chip, but couldn't find a buyer, so they decided to actually just create a product that utilized the functionality of the DSP, and they couldn't think of anything, so they thought, well, let's just make something that when you typed it, it said it, and boom, that's, you know, engineers making a toy.
And then E.T. got a hold of it, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Although I did see a comedy routine on Johnny Carson back when it first came out where, I forget the name of the comedian, the founder of The Simpsons, Brooks, I believe his name, Alfred Brooks, he did a comedy routine with a Speak and Spell on Carson, making it say stupid things back to his obvious straight-line questions.
Yeah, people, the music chip, the SID chip in the Commodore 64, that's kind of made a comeback, too. Like all this, you know, all these pop singers, all their background music that sound like video games, that's all SID chip stuff from the Commodore 64, so.
Well, they're trying to be creative, and they're using the tools that are lying around. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the whole modding and creating movement anyway, is they're picking up, as you were saying, these building blocks. rocks that are just lying around, beautiful tools, tremendously powerful subsystems. You buy a top of the line. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ben. Go.
Oh, yeah. Well, something else that's driving it is, you know, we get this a lot. You know, we have a web show on element14.com, and, you know, we get a lot of requests, and people ask us something, and, you know, like, where, you know, I say to them, like, we Google stuff just like everyone else does. I have a lot of friends in IT, you know, they get paid well, and half the time they just Google everything. And it's like, and the more time goes by, the more Google knows. And so there's just tons and tons of information that people, other people have accumulated, and it's all out there on the Internet, and it just keeps growing and growing, like how much data is out there. And it just opens it up for everyone.
Tremendously so. Now, obviously, we're a power magazine, well, website nowadays, but the bottom line is that it all has to be driven. And there are obviously things that you as a designer can give as tips to, basic things that have helped them in their projects. What are like some of the top three things that people make a mistake in and you've seen in the builds?
Are we talking about hobbyists or engineers?
You could strike at whichever level suits you anecdotally for the humor and interest of the situation.
Well, people who are getting into the hobby, I guess, since we're talking about the maker movement, the big thing, I don't know if it's a mistake, but a lot of times they get confused between what if something that's worth your time or worth your money. And I think that's kind of where there's a disconnect, and I feel this a lot myself. That's kind of how I change. It's like, oh, if I take this, like you said, an existing piece of junk, and I can make it into some other piece of junk, and is that possible? And we see that a lot. Like, the big thing is everyone wants to take old LCDs out of laptops and turn them into something. And the thing is, truthfully, it's not really worth the time to do that. The thing I always want to tell people is, like, you know, if the amount of time you spend trying to do something cheaply exceeds the cost of just doing it expensively, you're losing money.
Exactly.
And it's kind of, and people who don't do it for a living, they don't think about it that way. You know, if you're, you know, like it's some old guy building a ship in a bottle, you don't care about, you know, you're doing it as a hobby. So it's kind of a disconnect there, you know, at what point are things not worth it? So I see that a lot, you know, basically, like, you know, if you can buy something, it's not really cost effective to build it. Again, but for me, pretty much all the things I have to do in a time-efficient manner.
Well, but that also, though, Ben, if I may point out, that that argument is currently being made even at the design engineering level. Why design a point-of-load circuit when there are so many devices out there available, for example?
That's the thing. It's like it just if someone's already done it and you can use it, that already saves you time. I mean, it's fun to try to do things yourself because you can learn the concepts of how they work, and that's great and all. But yes, if you're trying to do something, if you have a deadline, a schedule, what you can just get done is usually, you know, whatever you can do quickly is what I usually go for. That's why I was mentioning earlier, if I'm embedding something, sometimes I'll just, like, take, like, a PIC32 development kit or an AVR development kit, and I'll put it right in the thing because, like, it's faster than, like, getting the circuit board done. For me, a lot of times, it's whatever I can do the fastest. So.
Well, and that applies also to engineers who are actually creating products because they're often designing on a time budget, they're designing on a money budget, and sometimes it is cheaper just to slap a single board off-the-shelf system in there and just, you know, eat the functionality you're not using because it's cheaper to just throw that in the box.
Yeah, then you think about how long it takes to get a PCB, the cost of the PCBs. Like, yeah, I mean, especially depending on your quantity, it can actually be cheaper. I think I just last night, I designed my own little AVR board to embed and stuff for the show, and I spent months tweaking that. I'm like, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to order this thing, and hopefully it's right. But, then, you know, you have to order so many circuit boards at a time, so you have to make damn sure that's correct. And
right.
There's a lot of cost there.
There is.
But time, I always tell people, a couple friends of mine have started, like, a boutique pinball company, and they were here today, and we were working on prototypes, because on the weekends, I try to work on my own stuff. And Chuck, and the guy's name is Chuck, and he has a MakerBot like me, and he's like, yeah, I've actually been able to pick up jobs, 3D printing jobs from a MakerBot, and he's like, I have no idea how to build it, and he's like, well, the material has such and such cost, and I'm like, Chuck, the material is effectively worthless.
Exactly.
All that matters is time. It's all about labor and time, and that's another thing I always impart on people. Like, when people request work from me, I'm like, you know, the parts are a drop in the bucket. It's all about time and labor. So I guess that's another kind of lesson for people. Like, that's, well, if you look at anything, like, you know, like any industry, like labor intensive things, it's, you know, it's the people you have to pay, that's where most of the money goes.
This is also true. This is also true. So, like, what's a common power error? You wouldn't even say, I wouldn't say error. I think off the top of my head, I would say people sometimes either obviously overestimate their power budget or sadly underestimate their power budget because they either A, don't realize that the device isn't going to be used as much or they're not even paying attention to it, or B, they are wildly optimistic about the duty cycles involved.
Well, I guess I could speak just my own experience on that. I usually think about what is the most it might possibly draw and then double it.
that's a good rule of thumb.
Because I've seen that a lot. Well, this comes up again when you're hacking stuff. It's like, oh, this thing was designed to consume this much power, and the power supply says it's rated for this. And I'm like, well, if it's rated for that, that means it can actually do, this much more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really a solution, but I'm just saying that's something that comes up with me a lot. I'm just trying to think of what else I can...
Well, Ben, on that, if I may interject, then on that point, if you think about it, with this whole situation about Internet of Things and the non-wireless aspects of it, nowadays you've got the USB pipeline as a low-power bus, and you've got power over Ethernet now being more widely accepted as a high-power bus. I think you're going to see a lot of devices being designed for that power envelope, the 30 watts on the...
On power over Ethernet.
Right. You follow me? So you'll see a lot of smart peripherals start popping up that work at the maximum PoE power.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've seen that with USB. And, USB, having a simple, cheap plug with power is, I think, like one of the greatest advancements in technology ever. It seems simple, but it's really changed everything.
It's a real democratization, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to remember serial ports on digital cameras, so actually, you don't have to be that old to remember that. But it's just changed so much, and then, yeah, if they can do it with Ethernet, that's even better. I've always found it strange, like one of the projects we're working on, I did not have I didn't put a diode someplace that I should have. So if you stick USB into the programmer, it tries to power everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the design flaw, and it's kind of amazing sometimes how much circuitry will run off that 500 milliamps. Even though you don't want it to, if the rest of the system's not powered up.
Exactly.
And they're
exactly.
Like, oh, crap. It's like, that's working, and that's working, and that's working off the 5 volts. It's like, damn, I better unplug this thing.
Something's, somewhere's going to pop, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, with electronics, if we had better batteries even, or especially with electric cars and whatnot, it's once that technology improves, it's going to be like probably the next quantum shift in what we can do. Because right now, everything is all, it's all about making low-power devices just because we have to get the most out of our batteries. But, what if the batteries were more powerful?
Well, we would still want low-power devices because we'd want the maximum out of those batteries.
Oh, yeah, and then once we got the better battery, we would use every ounce of the available power up, and it would immediately be gone.
Exactly, exactly.
I saw some amazing stuff. Did you see those guys who designed this that had the power, the battery in the, it was like a... It was a battery on silicon, I think, and they were...
Yeah, the Simbet people. The Simbet, the chip cell battery people. Yes, I'm a big fan of their technology, frankly.
That's what it is, right? It's a battery in a package, right?
Yeah. It's right now the biggest applications are timing circuits and things that have to have a constant trickle of power or anything that needs, say, a trigger voltage like a fuse or something like that because it's not a lot of power, but the technology is very promising.
Hold on 1 second. Yeah, one thing they had there, they had a photo of it. It was just unbelievable. It was this thing that would go under your eye and measure the pressure of the fluid in your eye.
Exactly. Well, that's enough power for that kind of a sensor application.
Yeah, but it was the battery and the arm core and the solar panel, and it was like a millimeter square. It was insane.
Isn't modern science?
Am I in the future?
Isn't modern science wonderful? That's why I love this business. But the bottom line is that, that's why power's back. If you think about it, Ben, power is totally back. You have to think about power today when you're designing.
Right, because everything's mobile and whatnot.
Exactly, because it's all got to be untethered at some point or another in order to be functional. And it's going to have to rely on either energy harvesting. For example, that would be a perfect application for an eye. Put a Peltier on the backside of it and draw some body heat differential or something. The eye's got enough of a temperature.
Oh, right. On the back of the eye?
Well, the back of the chip, have part of the array that's embedded into the retina, make that part of a heat sink.
You have to have a way to sink the heat on the other side of it, though. I mean, you need some sort of like.
Well, the free side of the sensor would be in the liquid portion of the eye.
Ah, okay. I always thought it'd be cool to make a blood radiator. Topic.
Blood radiator.
Think about it. Like, if you're like a construction worker, if you could like if you would need more blood for it to work.
You would need
but
more blood.
If you could
blood.
Like radiate your blood through a device, you could stay a lot cooler.
This is also true. Well, before we wander,
yeah, subject.
There you go. But before we wander on too far, but do you have any thoughts for our audience before we close out the episode, Ben?
Just general thoughts about Maker,
if you like, or if you had anything specific about power, that's fine. If you just wanted to give somebody out there some advice on, if, you know, getting started with a project, what's some of the things?
Well, it's a great time to get into engineering. It's, you know, there's more information than there ever was. You know, watching my show is great. We take a lot of viewer requests, and we try to show a lot of basics so people kind of understand that, you know, it can be approached. It's not magical. And then we have our Element 14 community where you can join and ask questions and work with fellow engineers and hobbyists and, you know, find your solutions and then, of course, you know, buy cool products. So I guess, you know, I plug that. So I try to do my part to teach people things and inspire them. And, you know, these young kids will get inspired, and then by the time they're my age, they'll be 50 times smarter than I am. So... That's because, you know, it is something, you know, it is good to engineer, because even if manufacturing these things is somewhere else, the engineers are quite often still here in America. So it's a job that doesn't get outsourced as much as others. So
excellent point, Ben. Excellent. Well, hey, thank you very much for giving us the time. We really appreciate having you on the show.
Oh, no problem.
Well, we'll drag you back sometime in the future if you'll let us.
That sounds fine.
Excellent. Well, hey, thanks again, Ben. And I'd like to thank everybody out there in the audience for taking the time to listen to us. We wouldn't be here without you. Tell your friends. This is Alex Pault for Pault on Power. Have a great day.